September 22nd.
If that skill is not taught, the skill that you have a self, that the self you have is your own working position, that's your stage, that's your office, then they won't have it. If they don't not told that they have it, they won't have it. So it's very important that that be presented as a starting point for every one of us, that the self you have is what you have to take full responsibility for. It is your very breath. It is your significance in the universe. So value that. Value you.
You know, Jason, and this sounds really, it does, it sounds really good, and I've kind of got a lot of things going through my mind as you're talking about this. One of the things is, in order to do that and make the child the center of education, then we need to be recognizing children for their accomplishments more than just, you know, the great athlete, the great writer, you know, the most, you know, the most skilled in the school. They all need to be recognized for their strengths in order to be that center.
That
follow
is
what I'm saying?
Absolutely, absolutely 100% with you on that. They ought to be recognized for their presence. If you're present, that's the point. That's the starting point for everything. And your presence is the significance that adds value to everything you do. It adds value to the reading. It adds value to the writing. It adds value to the ability to count. It's you who add the value. It's not the things that add the value to you. The things, the capacity, the ability to read, the skill to read, write, and count only add to your usefulness wherever you are.
You know, it's
go
putting
ahead.
The child in the sort of the center, in control of the situation, it really reminds me of, you know, people would call it traditional primitive lifestyles, where the child was taught by their parents and elders the various things that they were going to need to know as they became adults.
Yeah.
Child was in control of the situation. They were recognized as an individual entity. Their spiritual development was part of the overall education process. And we've gone away from that. We've gone to this industrialized assembly line education method.
Absolutely.
And we've left out, you know, a huge chunk of...
The left
out
the child,
yeah.
And we're paying for it. We're paying for it, and the child is paying for it, and the society is paying for it, because there is no center, there's no point from which responsibility can be assumed.
That's very, you're absolutely right. I mean, we can go off in so many different directions on this,
oh,
too.
Yeah.
So let's say we take the child, and we are able to create this type of education system where they can take responsibility, where they do feel important, where they do feel like that their breath of life makes a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've created this whole thing, at least in the United States, I don't know about other countries, about, okay, so they get to their final point, and they've made it.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's no job for them.
Yeah. They have no self and no job. And they don't have the skills to look around and see that the universe is theirs. And they don't have the skills to convert the universe into fulfilling their needs, because that hasn't been taught in school. And so we're saying, Gaia and November, and the listening audience, let's not beat up on ourselves for not having the skill of the fourth R. But let's now realize that this is the starting point where we regard ourselves as the significant point in the universe, as the, literally the axis of the universe. And don't be afraid to accept that. Don't be ashamed of accepting that. Because it's by accepting that that we begin to take responsibility for ourselves. And then we don't have to be afraid, because the universe comes with the support that we need to assume responsibility for ourselves. And so that we want to invite all the teachers listening, all the people who have influence over other people listening to go back to the drawing board. And if we didn't get that skill of reverence, the fourth R, let us begin now by knowing that, yes, we begin it, we begin to activate it by becoming conscious that our breath is our life, and that is the capital that we use to create everything else that we experience. That number two, our self-talk, is really a production center, that our heads are production centers where we produce our experiences. And the third set, this third skill in the set, is what we put into our bodies. What we eat determines how our bodies feel, how we function. So it's very important for children to be taught how to listen to their bodies and how to supply it and nurture it with the kind of foods that make our bodies feel good and function very good. So nutrition is not should not be left to the ethers for guiding us. We should be taught, just like how we're taught reading, writing, and arithmetic, how to listen to our bodies and how to supply it with what makes it work the best.
And I don't think that's going to be fast food.
No, I agree, because the building that I work in, we have an open campus. Well, guess where all the fast food restaurants are located? They're within walking distance. I believe there's four of them within walking distance of the school.
Yeah.
And now the school has taken steps to take out of the school itself things like soda pop and candy. I don't know. I guess there is still some vending machines. But when I was growing up, we didn't have any of that. We had healthy meals. There was no open campus. You ate what everybody else did in the cafeteria or brought your own lunch.
Yes.
And I've seen studies where it really does impact a child's education on what it is that they're eating on a daily basis.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, I grew up in an open, I went to school on an open campus, but I lived in a town that had no fast food. I had my first Big Mac, I think I was 16 years old.
Okay.
I had never eaten such a thing before.
Yeah.
You know, a very small town, but, you know, open campus, I mean, where were you going to go? You were going to go home for lunch. You really didn't even have time to do that.
That's
I don't
right.
know why they bothered having an open campus.
Yeah.
But they did. Yeah. You know, most of us rarely went anywhere, because where were we going to go?
That is it. And by the time you were 16 and had your first Big Mac, Your constitution had already been established by the kind of food you had been eating, the kind of stuff that was good for you.
Well, hopefully so, anyhow.
Yeah. Because the truth about it, you know, November and Gay, is that nature is a nurturer, and we are in its womb with all of the nutrition and all the support we need to evolve the most functional bodies. It's fully supplied. You know, we talk about fully loaded.
Uh-huh.
Nature is fully loaded with all of what we need. We just now have to pay attention to our bodies and what nature has to offer and pair it off, so that we're always listening and we're always taking the feedback from our bodies. And this goes again to that other point of when you make the person significant and central and make them realize that they have something to be paying attention to, it makes a big difference than when the child is not there, when he's totally marginalized and some other stuff is put at the center. So
I think losing the thing that where the child was focused on was the focus because they were your future.
Yeah.
Where they lost importance and they became regarded more of a burden.
An economic burden, yeah.
Right. I think that has been really a negative input on our society, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And what we're inviting now, because it's never too late, as long as we have our presence, as long as we have our breath, we have what to work with. So what the breathing does is firstly, it establishes you and it feeds you. It supplies you with what you need when you begin to do it consciously. It supplies you with that sense of being here and being supported, which then gives you what to work with. Because you are here. Every one of us listening right now is right here, anchored in our breath, in the universe that is fueled by the same breath, and we aren't going anywhere. We've just taken our attention, we've just been paying attention to the sideshow instead of on us, ourselves, which is the central show in the whole business. And this is
so often I watch people and I think they're all on this insane rat wheel to
yeah.
see how much they can consume in the course of their days alive.
Yeah.
And that's their sole goal.
Yeah. It doesn't satisfy, which means the lack of satisfaction is demonstration that that's not the way to go. Because our bodies are always, you know, the biofeedback?
Uh-huh. Yes, I'm familiar with it.
Yeah, our bodies are always telling us whether it's satisfied with our actions or not. And so, if we are able to listen to our bodies, which is what should be taught, again, this part of the fourth R, the children should learn the skill of paying attention to ourselves so that when our body gives us a report, we can respond to the report and we take the necessary steps to balance ourselves. So,
question. I'm going to interrupt you again.
Sure,
please. I have a question from the audience and came in text. How do we, in the United States, take a population that is 80% urban, become aware that there is fresh air to breathe outside of the box, example, cities?
Well, the truth is that we have to anchor our consciousness into the reality of what we are. And every one of us, it doesn't matter whether we're in the urban or suburban areas, we are living because we have our breath. And our breath is that resource, that capital base, that is limitless in terms of its potential. So we are always being anchored by our breath. Which is always inviting us to pay attention to it, because it is where our life is coming from. So we have to learn now that this is where we're coming from, this is what we have, and this is what we have to work with. And that's why I said in the beginning, it doesn't matter at what stage we are now, if we want to really live, we have to develop that skill for ourselves. Conscious breathing consciously and deeply, as opposed to shallow breathing and not giving our brain the food it needs, the oxygen it needs. Because in truth and in fact, November and Gay, the reality is 90% of the energy we need on a daily basis is supplied to our breath. By the oxygen that we take, the intake. And by restricting the inflow of oxygen as we shallow breathe, we deprive our brains of very vital nutrition, very vital energy, that oxygen. Because without that full supply of oxygen, our brains shut down. And that is why the insanity that abounds is happening, because we're not supplying our main equipment, which is our brain, with the oxygen, with the fuel it needs to function at this highest level. So wherever we are right now, if you're listening, the most important thing you can take away from this discussion is I have to begin to pay attention to my breath, because my breath is my life. It is literally what I am. And if you don't pay attention to what you are, then you're going nowhere.
Very interesting, Desmond. You're talking about really shaking up the U.S. educational system, a real grassroots movement, and I'm assuming you're not just talking the U.S., the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Gosh, how do you go about doing something like that?
Exactly the way we're doing it, Gaia and November. We are the grassroots. We are the breath. And as we are doing it, we're doing the things that we can do. This is what we can do about it. We can share it with the passion that we're doing. And the people who are listening will catch on and realize that, yes, this is the empowerment skill that I've been looking for. The empowerment skill that I've been deprived of. But now I, myself, listening, can start with the next breath that I'm going to take. And I'm going to develop this skill. Because it's a practice. Once you see the beauty and the joy of experiencing your breath, you begin to ask, why did I take so long? How could I have been living without enjoying the benefits of this simple and free activity? So yes, this is how we go about it, Gaia and November.
And those of us in the United States with a rather sarcastic sense of humor are going to say, pretty soon they'll figure out a way to tax breathing too.
Yes, that's it. But this beautiful thing about it is we regulate the taxation on that one.
Yeah.
We regulate the income on that one.
And they're going to have a very hard time monitoring per breath, you know, really.
Yes, definitely.
So we may as well get a maximum benefit because, yeah.
I'm in charge of that one.
Okay, I have another question, Desmond.
Yeah.
Have you noticed a shift or a change in people searching for this type of awakening, if you will, say over the last 10 years or so?
I have. Believe me, I believe nowadays we can go out and have a conversation like we're having with people without being looked upon as being crazy. It's like people are looking for it. People, there are enough people who have been awakened at that level to be comfortable in not hiding these insights anymore, because all of the traditional institutions have proven that they're bankrupt in terms of providing answers that will satisfy people. You know, we can take a look at the whole thing of the whole theology and psychology and philosophy that people have guided themselves by over the past 10 years have shifted. And what we're now looking at is the emergence of what I call an affirmational theology, which is breath-based. It's based on the fact that your breath is your God, and there's no way to go around that, because it's your breath that gives you life. And so your breath is affirming you, so your God is a self-affirming force in you. And you can be comfortable with that, because every breath you take, you can say of it, this is what gives me my life. This is my God. So my God lives with me. My breath and my God are one and the same. So it gives you the basis from which to then look with confidence at yourself, as opposed to the old pathological theology that said that God is a supervisor who is keeping check of whatever you're doing. and that you should be fearful. Your breath says, be passionate. Be fearless. Enjoy what you are. It also looks at the other thing which we call, out of the theology comes the psychology. So we also now have an affirmational psychology in which you're not looking at yourself suspiciously and doing the whole analysis thing. You're not analyzing yourself to find where the fault is. You're accepting yourself as your breath. And that gives you the basis from which to see exactly what you are. You are the thoughts you have in your mind. You are the feelings you have, and you can own these without being afraid of them. The images you keep in your mind, you can look at them and take possession of them because you're not afraid of yourself anymore because your breath is your PowerPoint. So you can feel experientially your wellness and your worth, and you can look at it through the lens of your psychology and see how wonderful you are. And you can accept in the depth of your being, at the point of accepting yourself as your breath, that yes, I am this wonderful reality, this magic. And then the need for a philosophy, a philosophical position, or a practice of your life, which corresponds with your theology, affirmational psychology, and an affirmational practice or philosophy that says, I'm in my universe, this universe is mine, and it supports me, and it gives me a sense of belonging which enables me to live one conscious breath at a time without fear. So yes, there has been a major shift, and we are simply passing the skills on that will enable people to take on the responsibility for participating in this fish.
A couple minutes ago in the virtual auditorium, the question of, don't you mean the fish, the spirit that its creator imbues each being with. So that was referring to what you were talking about just a couple of minutes ago.
Yes, beautiful. Beautiful.
So that was what you were referring to.
That's right.
Okay.
That is right.
So I hope that clarifies it for our listener.
Yeah. And that is the beauty about it, November and Gare, that what we're doing is literally celebrating the truth of ourselves. The self that you're experiencing. Not some philosophical, theoretical stuff that you have to go and try to wrap your mind around. But really the beauty of the self you can feel as yourself right now as we converse.
You know, in listening to you talk about revamping the educational system, the American educational system changes with about the same speed as the alligator has mutated over the millennia.
Yes.
I mean, it really just doesn't happen too quick. A lot of things are still clinging from the earliest days of public schools. So to try and expect rapid change in the public school system is almost like hoping for the mammoth to reappear.
Yes.
So what kinds of things could a person do to restore that sort of ideology in the home to compensate for what the child was not getting in the traditional school environment? Because not everybody has the option of a private school for their child.
That's right. Well, I would say, Gare and November, that we have to reassert ourselves, revisit the whole process, and look at the fact that the womb, the mother's womb, is the starting point for this instruction, for the passing on of this skill. That the mother and the father and the parents involved have to be made aware of the fact that the child needs the skills. You know, just like in the animal world, where the animals just focus and specialize in passing on the life skills that the animals, their young need.
Mm-hmm.
So it is that we have to now become aware that this fourth R skill set, is a life skill. As a matter of fact, it's the most important of life skills, and that we should make sure that we practice it and pass it on to our children. Because if we give them this one, which is self-worth, which we pass on the skill of knowing that you have to accept yourself, and that we pass on the skill of valuing your presence, and we practice it, then the children will get it. You know, even from in the womb, they will be getting this message that you are important, you are significant.
I think the first thing we have to do is teach parents to value their children then. Because I've watched people, I don't have any young children at home anymore, my daughter's grown. I watch people and they treat their children like their children are a horrible inconvenience. And I look and I wonder, why on earth did you have them?
That's right. Because believe me, that's what we didn't get those skills that should be able to teach us that our children are God, literally, expressions of the holy universe, is what we would call God. The universe for me is God.
Uh-huh.
And the breath is what gives birth and manifestation and expression to all of the forms in the universe. So unless we get the awareness that this is so, then what you're seeing, the dysfunctionality you're seeing, will be one taking place. Because most of these parents are products of the educational system.
Okay, so what makes a difference? I had a public education.
But can you go back to your parents in terms of how they treated you?
My mother's family is very, very child-oriented. Children are highly valued.
Okay.
And we have a very traditional way of interacting with them, you might say.
Okay, then you got it. You got it.
Now, my father's family is mainstream America. Kids are to be not heard or seen, and, you know, you're to reappear sometime when you're an adult and are well-dressed.
Yeah. That's right. But you got that from your mother, and you took it in, because there is such a thing as water finding its level.
And so
you found that's what you needed, and
well,
you found it.
Obviously, as a child, you're going to identify with people who actually are teaching you things and interacting with you versus ones who expect you to, I guess, hide the closet. I don't know where they expect kids to be honest. Because they would literally to be seen and not heard.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange, I thought, as a child.
Yes. But the beauty about it is that's part of the theology of the, it's called mainstream America, that God expects you to behave the way he is, and it's a he God, by the way.
Oh, yeah, definitely he God. And
yeah,
he's jealous, and he's apt to just strike you down because
you didn't behave the way he expects you to behave.
Yeah, or you said that prayer wrong or something horrible anyhow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, again, we're looking at people use the skills they have been taught. Dysfunctionality is not accidental. It is the product of skills that are not functional. But those are the skills that people got.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
I have another question from the virtual auditorium. And it's whether or not, Desmond, you're able to express your perception of creation.
My perception of creation? Yeah. My perception of creation is that it's happening right now, even as we proceed with it. that, you know, there are certain things that my intellect is not able to explain about life, and so I don't bother to go through the trouble of trying to explain, because I can't. My intellect doesn't have that, doesn't have all the information to explain life. But I certainly can enjoy it and observe how it works. So as I'm attuned, as I pay attention to it, I see how it works, and I'm a part of it, and it's a wonderful thing.
Okay. And also another question from the virtual auditorium is, what about your experience with the practice in the prison system in Jamaica?
Well, that's where I developed the fourth R skill set. When I went into the prisons with the desire, it was really just a desire to share what I felt about life with the men and the women. I found out also that they had lacked that skill of self-acceptance that was necessary for them to put a value on themselves and a value on others. And as soon as we started interacting, they began to develop this, I'm worth something, because that's what I was sharing with them, that your breath is the prime capital of the universe, and you have it, so you're valuable. It doesn't matter what you did before this point. You still have your breath, and you can move into another direction. And in 5 years of consistently passing that message, the men took it, internalized it, and transformed the entire prison culture. They began to care about one another. When we had men go on furlough, like men who were serving life sentences, they went on furlough, they would return, all of them would return before the time that was allotted. And the whole culture turned around, that these men who were hard-hearted and supposed to be murderers and rapists and stuff like that, they let go of that perception of themselves, and they let go of those habits and created new selves, literally, from the start of their breath. And in 5 years, the thing was changed. So that we had people from Harvard University who heard about the change, the shift in rehabilitation procedures, came down and looked at it and said, well, you know, this is what the best practices we have ever seen. And I'm convinced that is the result of passing on the skills to them that were beneficial skills, and which I'm saying now, if we pass on those skills to the children in school, they will come out with the skills of reading, writing, arithmetic, and the skill of reverence for their lives.
You know, here in New Orleans, we've had a lot of crime problems that have not abated a great deal since Katrina. It did for a while, but as people came back, so did the crime rate. And often, you know, the criminals and the victims really come from the same socioeconomic background.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they are. Their education is substandard. Mm-hmm. When they're hired into jobs like fast food and whatnot, you can't even understand their spoken English, hardly.
Mm-hmm.
They don't even learn how to speak American English well enough to get a decent job. You're never going to go anywhere if you can't support yourself.
That's right.
Step into a life of crime.
That's right.
And so you're seeing this. They go through school acting out against the teachers and
mm-hmm.
whatnot. They're continually being programmed that's what they're destined to do.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, out of those same batches of kids, there's a certain percentage that get a good education, that do all the right things, you know, what makes the difference between child A that lives in the same project, goes to the same school as child B? Child B is dead before they're 18 years old, and child A, you know, goes on to become a normal, productive citizen.
Yeah. And I'm sure I would think that somewhere along the line, if you traced it back, you would see that somewhere along the line the message was passed on and was received, because it was passed on by compassionate sources and the child got the message. But what we're observing is that if the school is responsible for providing the skills to the child, and if the skill of marginalization is passed on to the child, then the child is going to come out and marginalize others. You know, you use the skills that you get.
Yeah, and they learn skills of bullying and, you know, all kind of crap.
Oh, yeah.
And,
oh, yeah.
You know, then they come out and they are very negative to be around, you know, and they become adults
who are
problems. You know, I've had encounters with people that are very, very negative, and for little reason, they will verbally lash out at you, you know, in stores.
Definitely.
And whatnot, and you're like, you know, do I have a neon sign over my head that says, yell at me, please, and swear at me because I need it?
That's right. And we're saying that is the normal response of skill sets that we give people. You give them skill sets that marginalize them, they will come out knowing how to marginalize themselves and others. You pass on what you get.
So we need to break that cycle, which includes educating adults as well as children.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Which is why the intervention of the fourth R invites everybody who is not operating or not functioning in a balanced way, in a functional way, to take a look at the skills they have, not to demean themselves, not to point fingers at themselves, not to join in the pathological theology that says you're a sinner and therefore you're bad and therefore that's what you're going to behave like. We don't implore the pathological psychology that looks for the fault to correct it. We have to now start out with the point of the breath, where you realize that your breath is pure and perfect and is able to go into any direction that your desire directs it. Your breath will just as much support the president as it will support a criminal, because it doesn't know the difference. So the importance of skill training, of providing that environment where the young is molded and provided with his skill, the experience, to value themselves and to value their environment and to value others, they will come out with those skills. And prisons, the prisons in all over the world are outmoded. They're archaic, and they're not.
Hold that thought there, Desmond.
Hold
that thought. It's now time for a break, folks. So while that's happening, please log into exogenynetwork.com. Take a look around. There's a lot of information there. In the meantime, do stay tuned, and the Dawn of Shades will be right back with our guest, Desmond Green.
Yeah. You specialize in teaching the fourth R, that will be fine.
Maybe so.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the Dawn of Shades. I'm Gia Scott, and November Hansen is my co-host this evening as we talk with Desmond Green. Now, we didn't mention it earlier, but Desmond has his own website, and it's real simple. It's www.themoodschannel.com. I almost forgot it there for a second there,
yeah.
Desmond. Uh-huh. My mind went blank all of a sudden, but that's www.themoodschannel.com.
Yes.
Just like it sounds. Okay, where were we?
We are at that point where we're looking at dysfunctional people as not being bad, but people who need the skills to function. And we're looking at the purpose of schools and schooling and societies as being, number one, to provide all of us with the skills so that we can express ourselves beneficially. And we said the fourth R is that skill, that final skill, that if you get it, you got life going on your terms. And it consists of learning to breathe and realizing that your breath is your capital base. It's your life. It's your God. It's your power. That you should be conscious of it, because it is that much for you. It's worth that much to you. That number two, you should pay attention to your headspace, the head, the self-talk, what you're saying in your head, because it is creating the world of your choice. Number three, you should pay attention to the food you put into your body, because that determines how it functions. Number four, you should exercise. Exercise your mind, exercise your body, exercise, exercise, exercise. Because the more you exercise, the better you will function. And number five, your vision of yourself attracts the experiences you have. The vision you have of yourself calls to you all that you need to express and manifest that vision. So pay attention to what is going on in your mind in terms of that vision you have of yourself. And number six, accept who you are completely, because you are what life is. Define yourself in terms that you can see and taste and smell and feel and know. When you say, I am my breath, that's you. When you say, I am my feelings, my thoughts, images I have in my head, that's you. You can experience that. When you say, I am my consciousness, everything I'm conscious of, that's you. You can experience that and define yourself in those terms. Accept who you are. Doesn't matter how you look. Doesn't matter what height you are. You're not subject to other people's qualifications. You are the best expression that nature has, that God is demonstrating now, that your breath is manifesting now. So the self you have is the best self for you, and you have participated in creating it the way it is. So if there are things you don't like about yourself, go back to the basics. Go back to the elements. You're made up of the air, the water, the fire, and the earth. All of these elements are pure and perfect. And that's what makes you. Basically, you are perfect, complete, and whole as spirit, body, mind, and soul right now. And that is the basis of your being. If you accept that and work with that and pay attention to that, you won't need another self because you have the best. And the last step in this skill set of the fourth R is generosity. Be generous, because everything that you have has been given to you by life, and it gives you what you have allowed it to give you, notwithstanding that it has so much more waiting to offer you, that you will never run out of what is real. You'll never run out of the air. You'll never run out of the water. You'll never run out of the earth vibrations, the fruits and the vegetables. You'll never run out of what is real. And you are what is real. So if we teach our children the truth about them, wrapped in this skill set of the fourth R, if we ourselves begin to develop this skill, because as we said earlier on, it doesn't matter where you are in this journey in life, now is the best time to develop the fourth R, the skill set that sets you in tune with who you are, that anchors you in the reality of your breath and the reality of the universe, which is this breath. When you begin to do that, it will change your life for good. It will equip you with the tools, with the skills, because you're born with the tools anyway. It will equip you with the skills to make the best of your choices. So, we are in school, and you're listening to what goes on at school, nature school, life school, because life insists that we develop the skills to make the best of the experiences we're having. So I'm open for more questioning.
As I'm listening to you, my mind is running 100 miles an hour, but I really didn't want to interrupt so that you could present the whole skill set in, you know, one little spiel without any interruptions on the questions.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, okay, you know, how can we take this and make this work in our really imperfect world? Because, you know, I can't go in and I can't re-educate every person
That's right.
New Orleans.
That's right.
I can't make them want to learn. What if they don't want to learn? I mean, how are you going to get this message, across?
Well, the truth is, you start out with the affirmational theological perspective that the world is perfect. We just don't have the skills to experience its perfection. And that's why we're here, to develop those skills. Because when you and I see the world as its elements, we're looking at perfection. Because the air is perfect, the water is perfect, the earth and the vibrations of the earth are perfect, the light is perfect, the fire, which is the other element, all these are perfect elements. And the world, the earth is made up of perfect elements. But now, at the level of us, what we are being asked to do is to develop the skills to experience and to celebrate the perfection. And that's why we have to develop a theology gear. The theology of the perfection of the universe, which would be different from the old pathological theology that has been imposed upon us, saying something is wrong with it, and something is wrong with us. That's what we've been battling, because the reality of who we are is defiant, and is going to insist on the fact that there's nothing wrong with us. We just don't have the skills to see how right everything is with us. So that's why schools should be places which show children how right they are and how right the universe in which they are is, so that they will develop the skills of managing it and contributing to it and exploring it and adventuring into it, because it's here for the adventure.
Life is a grand adventure. Just when you think you know where you're going, somebody spins the compass around and changes the map, and you get a whole new journey.
Absolutely. And it's fun if you know how to ride it.
Well, hang on tight. It's kind of been my theory.
Oh, I think we all have our moments. But, you know, for the most part, at least my impression, my feeling is, I was born into the right time period.
Yes.
Maybe even a little bit too soon.
Yes.
Because I love watching the evolution of just society. Yeah,
yes.
There's a lot of miserable things that go on out there.
Yeah.
But I would have guessed that my whole, you know, journey, awakening, probably began about 10 years ago. I just didn't want to be a part of it anymore.
Yeah. Yes. You've moved into another zone where you can observe more deliberately.
Right.
Yes, and that is where all of us are heading, where we come into our true divinity in the human terms, in the human forms, because that's what we are. The journey in consciousness has always been only a journey in consciousness, because the earth has always been here.
Fourth R could also include realization of ourselves and our abilities and who we really are,
yes.
What we really are.
That's right. That's right. Because when we strip away the misperceptions, we find God at the center of our being. We find our breath as the center of all realities. And this is what we are. And it's exciting to embrace our breath as ourselves and to know that we can let go of all the limitations that we have placed upon ourselves and the culture has placed upon us.
Well, it's really way more friendly and happy and cheerful and attractive than being told you're bad, 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 bad.
Yes.
You have to be miserable or you're going to be bad again.
Yes. That's it.
Why being miserable is going to keep you from being bad, but, you know, that's sort of the whole concept behind our rather puritanical outlook often.
Yes.
You'll be good.
The pathological theology, which presented God as being somebody who doesn't like fun.
Doesn't like fun, doesn't really like people even, you know?
Yeah, that's it.
You kind of look at that, and even as a child, you're going, well, dang, why did he make it? He should have stopped with a dog or something, you know?
That's it. It simply does not make sense. The world is full of potential fun. You know, in affirmational theology, the premise is that God is intentionally playful.
Well, he created the musk ox and what's that animal in Africa? The wildebeest.
Yeah.
Anybody that created those kind of creatures had to have a sense of humor.
Yes.
Because they're the most bizarre looking thing, even the moose.
Yeah.
You look at the moose and it's like, you know, what kind of a mind dreams up a creature that lives
and lives with it?
The platypus.
Yes.
These really crazy looking animals.
Yes. Yes, it's intentional playfulness at work. And when you begin to look and say, but this thing is all about fun. Was it you who said about laughter a while ago?
I don't know. But my basic idea is laughter is really good medicine.
Yeah, it is. Because it's godly medicine. This whole thing of life that we have right here as we're having it, Yeah, and November. It's fun.
It is fun.
Yeah, take a deep breath, feel how good it is, and take another one and another one, and realize that this is the rhythm of life, all of life.
Yeah, even when the air stinks of people spoiled refrigerators and garbage that hasn't been picked up in a week, you know what, taking that deep breath, you're kind of going, you know, I'm still here.
Yeah.
You know, life is good. I am still here.
That's right. That's right. And we are here to awaken to the fact that, yes, God is intentionally playful, that God has made me with his nature, but by intention, I am a playful being. And if I'm not playing, what am I doing with my opportunity, my potential? So that gives me the basis from which to let go of the theology that does not encourage playfulness, the psychology that doesn't.
Well, I don't know about you, but when I was going to school, I was taught the higher the animal on the intellectual scale, whatever it's called, the more the young played.
Yes.
So the smarter the animal, the more the play that was going on.
Yeah.
If that's the case, we should be playing a whole lot more.
Of course.
Our children, you know, I remember when my daughter was in school, I actually went to her teacher and I said, you know what? 5 and 6 hours of homework every day after school for a kid that's 7, 8 years old is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I don't care if it's because she's slow, because she's stupid, or whatever. It's too much for her.
Yeah.
Because she had no playtime.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, kids need to go outside and they need to, you know, chase
play.
Butterflies and imagine fairies and do all the things that children are supposed to do outside.
That's it. All of the things that God is doing outside. Go join him or her.
Yeah. You know, chase rabbits and look
yes.
where grass grows and
yeah.
smell what dirt tastes like and, you know.
Yes.
And what rocks taste like. Because I know I licked rocks when I was a kid. You'd taste them to see what they taste like.
Yes. That's it.
And, you know, you do all these weird things.
That's
and, you know, just as you're exploring the world.
That's it. It's for our exploration. It is. So you look at the little kittens and the little puppies and whether the young are playful.
And often
so,
the playfulness stays until adulthood. I've got a 6.5-year-old dog laying right here beside me who has been pestering through the entire show because she really thinks I should give up this talking stuff and play.
That's right. That
you know, nowadays
beautiful.
We don't teach children to explore. We tell them what everything is.
Yes. Part of the pathological theology. We don't want them to experience.
Maybe I was lucky. I lived in a remote part of the country. We didn't have television.
Oh.
We didn't even have a phone in the house until my daughter was a teenager.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, she's now a TV and phone-aholic, but she did grow up without those things being major parts of our life.
Yeah, that is it.
You know,
that is
and
it.
So the outdoors thing and going and exploring, you know, I did it with him. I've cooked on rocks.
Yes.
I have done all sorts of weird things.
Mm-hmm.
We've sat and listened to the wolves call at night. We've listened to elk bugle at night.
Oh.
I spent some sleepless nights, you know, wondering what is that noise outside. Afraid to confess to the kids that I don't know what that is and it might be something that bites.
Okay.
Well, you know, mom's got to be brave, right?
Yes.
You know, and I've done all that kind of stuff in exploring our world, you know,
and
what does this taste like? And, you know, they said that dandelions are edible, and folks, everybody in the world may eat dandelions, but I tried cooking them, and they were the nastiest things I've ever tasted.
Okay.
You know, and so we explored those sorts of things.
Yes.
And showing them how if you hold a... When I was a child, if you held a dandelion bloom up to your chin and it reflected yellow off your chin, it meant you liked butter. You know,
okay.
We did that stuff too, you know?
Okay. Yes. Live again. The invitation is to live again. And this is what the fourth R prepares you to do, to live again. It provides the children with the skill to live always. Because once you engage yourself with yourself and the rest of the environment, you're alive. So the it's really a call. It's really a call from the children who are dying off around us to help them to live again. And so as we make this commitment to ourselves to begin living again, then we can see how important it is to develop the fourth R skill as a skill set and share it with everyone who isn't living again. Because it's now the time of play. It's the age of playfulness. Conscious playfulness. Not just playing on video games. Not just playing on the computers. But playing with our breath. Playing with the earth. Playing with the water. Playing with the elements.
Yep.
Playing.
You know, even sticking your hand out the window as you're driving to work.
Yes.
And feeling how, as you tip your hand, the different forces of the wind on your hand.
Yes.
Silly as it is, sometimes doing silly little things like that make the journey much more interesting and relax you.
Exciting. Exciting. Yes, let's play again. That's the invitation, I would say. And not only just play, but you see, breathing is a very playful enterprise. And when you start playing, then you start experiencing things differently. Because again, this is a point where when our brains are shut down because of lack of use or lack of fuel, our eyes don't see clearly. And our minds and our imagination don't work as well as they should. So the primary thing is to feed the brain, and the brain will do the next. We'll pick up from there.
It will begin. I think doing exercises with our brains to keep them agile and able to work around new ideas and learn new things is a very useful thing to do.
Yes, definitely.
I think that if we don't use it, we lose it just like a muscle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we're not going to lose ours.
I don't want to lose my intellect. Because, you know, I watch a lot of elderly people around me struggling with new ideas.
Yeah.
And you know that 20 years ago they didn't have a hard time learning things.
That's right.
And you go through the directions, you know, three different ways, and they're still not getting it. You show them three different times how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're struggling to learn this new thing.
Because their brains are shut down.
Yeah, yeah.
The brains were shut down long ago.
You know, as you're approaching, you know, the middle age mark yourself, and you're seeing that in people that, you know, once upon a time outsmarted you every time you turned around, you're going, ooh, that could be me in 20 years or 30 years or 40 years.
Yeah, if you don't practice.
I can do something.
Yeah, if you don't exercise. We can reverse aging by just breathing and exercise. And we can stay young by being attentive to life, to our breath, to ourselves and to life around us. And the children can grow into giants by being given the skills to be in touch with themselves and with life. So the big invitation, this, we could literally name this the age of playfulness. The age of playfulness.
You know, as I've been sitting here listening to this, I was even watching a documentary the other day about the time of the Library of Alexandria and how we had science, we had philosophy, we had all these different things, and they were kind of all wrapped in together. And somewhere along the line, we kind of separated everything.
Yeah.
And they, and if you read about that time period, there was a certain amount of playfulness. There was, you know, the philosophy along with the science and the art and the drama and everything else that was going on. Sometimes I wonder if maybe we're not coming full circle back into something like that.
I believe we are.
Maybe I hope we are.
Yes, because as we said, you know, Gaia and November, what I have is a mandala. And at the center of the mandala is affirmational theology and the statement that is radiating from it is, I am my breath. I am intentionally playful because life is intentionally playful. And the second ring in the mandala is affirmational psychology, which is seeing self as being a part of the whole. You're part of your theology, and you embrace your theology because it's as simple as your breath. And who doesn't want to embrace their breath? So you embrace your breath and thereby embrace your God. And the psychology that springs out of that is having something to enjoy. And third ring in the mandala is affirmational philosophy, which is that your whole life becomes a practice of enjoying yourself, of breathing, seeing how beautiful you are, seeing how wonderful the universe is. Whether you have the hurricane or not, these are just aspects of the same universe. Whether, you know, dying is not this terrible thing, because you know that transition from one state to another doesn't deprive life of anything. Matter can neither be created nor destroyed. It is true. And as we do it, because I'm glad you mentioned it, that it's all one thing. There's no partition between the theology of playfulness and the psychology of feeling a sense of belonging and the practice of breathing, which brings them all together. This is indeed the truth, that we are being invited to be ourselves, to be at one with the universe, which is our home, and to be at one with one another, who are our families, because it's just one breath manifesting everything. Everything is related by way of the breath.
Desmond, I have another question. I know you've written a couple of books, and at least two. That's what I've seen on the website. Maybe you've written more than that. What else do you do in the course of, I don't know, your normal day to try to present this message to people that, you know, I don't know, I guess I'm asking, what do you do on a daily basis?
I am having fun just sharing the message with those who are willing to listen. And when I'm not doing that, I'm just enjoying the experience of being alive and well.
I was wondering if you had, like, done any seminars, or if you were working with any particular groups of people or that type of thing.
Yes. There's a group that I'm working with, Andy, who introduced me to Gregory.
Yeah.
Andy Skadberg, Dr. Skadberg.
Uh-huh.
I'm working with herself and Yvette Dubel in creating a learning space which we call the World Reverence for Life University.com. And all of our listeners can log in and take a look at what we're doing, because we're saying this is home. Life is home. And that those who don't have the skills to realize that it is home, ours is the opportunity to share with them the skills and the insights that we have gotten on the way home. So that's what I'm doing now, and saying all the insights we're sharing is meant for the family, and we're all family anyway. So let's sweeten the family ties by sharing what we get along the road. So everybody can take a look at the World Reverence for Life University.com, and if you feel like this is home for you, log in and make it home for you, because it's self-directed learning, but it's learning based on the theology of intentional playfulness of the universe, the psychology of complete self-acceptance, and the practice, the philosophy of living what's going on in your head.
Yeah. So would you also then maybe think that to a degree we kind of create our own reality?
Of course we do. We have the raw material, but the experience is the product of the skill sets that we have developed. So the raw material is there, but the experience is created by the skills that we have developed.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking about what goes through our heads. You know, everybody does this associative thinking. Somebody says something and it reminds you of something else.
Yes.
You know, I must be, as a child, I thought there was something wrong with me because I did that so often. And they're telling me I should be able to pay attention for 20 minutes, et cetera, et cetera. And I can't. Okay, I can't. Mm-hmm. And it's because of that. I go off on tangents all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I must play that way, too, because I'll have these silly songs come to my mind. Somebody does something, you know, silly, and I'll get a, you know, silly little song like, you know,
yeah.
You ain't getting nothing for Christmas. I mean, this is September,
yes.
You know?
Yes.
Just all sorts of random stuff pops in my head.
Yeah.
You know, and I get thinking about it. If anybody heard what runs through my head on a continual basis, they'd just roll over laughing.
Yes, yes, yes. We are such magical beings, November and Gaia, that if we were ever to just embrace ourselves, we would just have so much fun. But the selves we have are the selves which have been marginalized by our education, and we're told not to be the selves we are. But no, we're being invited to be the selves we are, and to teach the children to accept the selves they are, because this is magic. Childhood is magic. And, you know, it's an invitation to make the quantum leap, which is moving out of our heads into our breath. The quantum leap is experiencing ourselves as who we are, as what we are, and accepting that as the reality of our experiences, and letting go of the images that we have in our heads saying that this is what we should be, and the images that we're struggling to maintain. So this is what this fourth R would help us to do. It would help us to embrace and engage who we actually are, what we actually are, as the elements, the air, the water, the fire, the earth vibrations, and the skills to take full responsibility for the experiences we're having without being judged, without feeling guilty, without blaming. We let go all of those because they are a waste of energy, and begin to enjoy playfulness once more.
Okay, so what's your idea of playfulness? If you're going to be playful, what kind of things are you doing?
Playfulness is recognizing for me, like, we're playing now. We're playing, sharing thoughts, and playing with the energies of life right now. And playfulness is really embracing all of us as my own self. You're part of me now, forever. And to celebrate that, contemplate that, and know that it's true, and use that as part of my own fulfillment, and knowing that all the people listening to us are part of us, this is, the universe is inviting me to engage it. And with every breath that I take, I'm engaging it. And that's playfulness. This stuff that goes on in my head that I can look at and own the things that I want to manifest and the things I don't want to manifest, I shelve them if they weren't. If there are things I want to manifest sometime, I want to experience sometime down the road. But just knowing that there is no guilt in life. There is no blame. There is no shame. There is nothing to do other than just breathe and translate that energy into experiences that I enjoy.
Okay, so let me ask you this, if this could be an example of playfulness. I have this particular job that I'm not that crazy about doing, but it really needs to be done. I have a shed that needs to be painted.
Yeah.
I hate doing stuff like that, but I can find a way to make it fun.
Yes.
So is playfulness also those tasks in life that we don't particularly enjoy doing, but we find a way to
yeah.
make it at least entertaining enough that, okay, we can do this and get it done?
Absolutely. That is absolutely so. You take it on knowing that it's your breath that you're investing in it. And you can't exhaust your breath. There's never a point in the whole experience when the task you've set yourself will be more than the support you have to do it. So once we begin to trust our breath and realize how powerful we are, then everything else becomes playful.
Very interesting. So how do you use this in conjunction with manifesting what it is that you would like or that you desire in life? I mean, I know some people follow the ideology that we can, you know, kind of map out in our own minds what it is that we want to do, where we want to go, things we'd like to have or share or whatever, and somehow they find a way of manifesting that if it's done in the right way.
Yeah. I feel that just as how it is said that God gave life to man by breathing into him and her, it's the same way that when we breathe into our desires passionately, they become life, they come to life. So the easy way to create what you want to experience is to recognize the power of your breath and to direct your breath into those, whatever it is, the mold that you create and release it. And believe me, the universe will bring it into being.
Very interesting. How do you perceive the universe as interacting with us, or us interacting with the universe?
Firstly, I accept the universe as one breathing organism. An organism in which every tree is sharing with me through the breath, where the whole earth is breathing and sharing with me the fruits of its breath. So it's like we're all part of one gigantic breathing organism. We are related. And this is what the fourth R would do, would help us to participate in this relationship.
Just out of curiosity, do you think humanity is unique in the universe, or do you think there's other things out there?
Oh, I think everything is part of the same process, you know? There's no separation of us from anything else. And everything makes up to the whole that the whole thing is. And those of us who will breathe and feel our relationship with everything else, those of us are the ones who feel whole and feel secure and feel like we're part of everything, because we are a part of everything.
I think there's a lot of people out there that's coming into the reality, or at the very least, the ideology that we are actually a part of everything.
Yeah.
You may not understand the scientific, you know, formula that constitutes that,
yeah.
but yet it does seem obvious.
Yes, very much. Very much. And I think as we make that quantum leap, you know, people have been thinking of the quantum leap as a mathematical theory, and the physicists and the mathematicians have been trying to create this theory or that theory, string theory, field theory, all kinds of theories. But the quantum leap is really a breath-based acceptance of self as breath and acceptance of the whole universe as its breath, and living in that style, making it your habit, your practice of being at one with the rest of the universe, which theologically is my breath, psychologically it's anything I imagine, and philosophically, it's anything that I'm practicing. So life is a practice. And as you pay attention to that practice, pay attention to yourself, then you got it.
I believe so.
Yes. And if we can share this with those who come, if we can share this with ourselves and share it with those who we interact with, we would be certainly enriching our own lives. We're not doing it as a proselytizing thing. We're just doing it as a celebration of life. We're having fun.
Yeah, having fun is a great thing. And sometimes we forget.
Yes. Because we didn't, the skill to remember wasn't installed. But now we can do it because every time you take a deep breath and you feel how wonderful it is, you realize that this is what life is meant to be.
I would say absolutely. You know what, Desmond? I've really enjoyed this. Sometimes, and I have problems with this personally, sometimes having fun is just sitting down and relaxing and enjoying a conversation.
Yeah.
I'm always scattered a million places a minute, which that's who I am. That's what I'm comfortable with. But
yeah.
I do need that time just to sit down, enjoy a nice conversation, relax, you know, that type of thing. And this has been nice.
Thanks. It was nice for me, too. I enjoy it completely. We can do this again.
Yeah, we will have to do that again because now we are running very, very low on time.
Yes.
Folks, you can go to Desmond. His website is www.themoodschannel.com, and you can see what's up there. It's a fascinating website. My website is www.exogenynetwork.com, and November Hansen's website is thevoicesofpeopleradio.com.
Oh, wonderful.
So that gives you everybody's websites all in one.
Yes, and you add the last one. You add the other one, the World Reverence for Life University.com.
The word reverence? Word as in words, like
world.
English words?
No, world. W-O-R-L-D. World as in the world. World Reverence for Life University.com.
Okay. All right, and folks, I do thank you all for joining us tonight. I have found this interview absolutely fascinating, and I hope that you have found it quite illuminating as well as you make your own personal journey towards truth. Tune in every Tuesday from 7 to 9 Central on the Paranormal Radio Network as we bring fascinating guests and topics to you via this modern miracle called Internet Radio. With that, I am your host, Gia Scott, and we bid you good night.
Thank you.